puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
You know his voice. We hear him every Sunday. But do we know how multifaceted Gordon Goldsberry is? Do we appreciate the many layers and depths of Gordon? I don't think we do. We should find out today. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
I'm right, aren't I? You have many hats.
I do have many hats, and I always say that changing hats has caused all the hair to rub off, and that's why I look like I do.
But you're making up for it on the lower part of your face with your COVID beard.
That's exactly right. Yes. So, you know, some of our listeners know that in addition to my interest in history, I am, in fact, a professional biologist. And so I thought today we would talk about an orange colored plant that I think those people who are familiar with old structures, especially ones made of concrete, they'll recognize.
Okay. I got distracted by another, you know, spin-off series called Abandoned Plants, which you could possibly do. All right. So I did not realize that plants could be orange, first of all.
Well, yes. Yes. In fact, I mean, I wasn't kidding. This plant is bright orange all over, certainly as colorful as the citrus fruit. Very striking. I suspect many of our listeners have seen this plant, but they might not have realized it because of stereotypes they hold about what constitutes a plant. You know, now, because if I'm a botanist and I consider plants to include not just the green leafy things that we grow in our gardens and our crops, but also organisms such as algae and fungus. So today's conversation is about something called lichen. Now, lichen is not actually an organism at all, but a close relationship between two organisms, algae and fungus. And they can live together as a lichen in places where neither of them could live separately. It's something that we biologists call symbiosis. And today we're talking about a specific type of lichen called Xanthoria. It's a very descriptive name given its appearance. The word derives from a Greek word, xanthos, which means yellow.
Sounds like a superhero name. Anyway, you mentioned old structures as being somewhere where Xanthoria is found. What do you mean?
Well, in the course of my travels around Manitoba, I have visited numerous cemeteries. And when I look at gravestones, especially old ones, or even sometimes when there's a concrete pad that covers the entire grave site, they're often bright orange due to the growth of Xanthoria on them. But one of the most conspicuous places that I've found in my travels where Xanthoria was really abundant was on an abandoned concrete bridge over Plum Creek, about a mile west of Souris. You know, now it, at one time it was brilliantly white. It had these bright white concrete arches, and they're now completely orange as a result of Xanthoria. And, you know, I've been finding Xanthoria so often in my explorations of old concrete and stone structures that I've come to expect to see it there. So a couple of years ago, I asked one of my university colleagues, who is an expert on lichen — I'm not supposed specifically about lichens — so I asked her about it, and she said that the places where I found Xanthoria, she was not at all surprised that it would be there.
Why not?
Well, she said there were two reasons that Xanthoria grows well on concrete. One is that such places are not especially favorable to most plants. Now, lichens are very hardy things. They're capable of growing in places where few other plants can. So they thrive on concrete because of the absence of competition from other plants. Basically, they have the whole place for themselves. The other reason is that Xanthoria is especially well-suited to growing on concrete and other calcium-rich materials. It prefers to grow on materials that are rich in calcium, which is, of course, the case with concrete. Concrete has a lot of calcium in it, and likewise, some kinds of stone have lots of calcium. But what I find particularly interesting is where on these materials you find Xanthoria growing. It does not grow evenly all over the surface, but it grows in roughly circular patches, mostly on the tops of these surfaces, but rarely on the sides.
Why is that?
Well, one reason is the tops are well exposed to sunlight. Now, and of course, that's important for an organism that depends on photosynthesis for its nutrition, as lichens do. And the tops are usually wetter than the sides, you know, especially when there's cracks and crevices, because water runs off vertical surfaces more easily than horizontal ones. But there is also a chemical reason. In addition to being attracted by calcium, Xanthoria is well known to be nitrophytic. And what this means is that it prefers sites where there are high levels of nitrogen.
So why would nitrogen be high on the tops of the concrete, but not on the sides?
Because that is where animals such as rodents and birds tend to sit. And so that's where dung accumulates, and the dung breaks down to release nitrogen and other chemicals. In other words, Xanthoria grows best where animal feces collect. In fact, it's described, this species of lichen is described by scientists as ornithocoprophilus, which means bird poop loving.
No, it doesn't.
It does. In fact, there is a scientific word that says some organism likes to live with bird poop. And, you know, the Souris Bridge, because of those graceful arches, I suspect over generations, birds have been perching on there and pooping. And as a result, the environment is just perfect for Xanthoria. And as a result, it has grown all over the horizontal surfaces of that bridge.
So if Xanthoria grows well on concrete, why is it found only on old buildings?
Well, there's two reasons. First, new buildings tend to be fairly well maintained. So if any lichen started growing on them, somebody probably would come along and scrub it off pretty quickly. But I think more importantly, lichen grows exceptionally slowly compared to other plants. So it is only on old concrete structures, and especially ones that are abandoned and therefore not kept clean, where enough time has elapsed for Xanthoria to grow to a significant size.
How large can they get?
Well, a grave in the Canadian Arctic, dating from 1848, it belonged to one of the sailors of the ill-fated naval expedition of Sir John Franklin. That grave was found to have a circular patch of Xanthoria growing on it. The diameter of the patch was just a little under 2 inches, so not especially large, and it had taken 102 years for the lichen to reach that size. Now, lichen... Now the Arctic is a fairly hostile environment. So, you know, literally nothing grows there especially quickly. Xanthoria grows more quickly here in southern Manitoba because, of course, we have somewhat more temperate climates than the Arctic. So it can grow to, a similar size in just a few decades. So thinking about that Souris Bridge again that I found covered in Xanthoria, it was built in 1921, of course, 100 years ago. But I found a picture of it taken in 1961, and it had little or no Xanthoria in that picture. So the growth has been, relatively rapid over the past 60 years in order to cover the entire bridge. And in fact, knowing the time over which a patch of Xanthoria has grown allows us to calculate the rate at which it's growing, how much each year. And this rate can have a useful application.
Like what?
Well, if we know the rate at which Xanthoria grows in a particular region based on the climate and sort of the local environmental conditions there, we can use it for what is called lichenometric dating. So for example, if geologists found a bunch of boulders that had fallen in an avalanche, if they could measure the diameter of Xanthoria patches that might be growing on the boulders and comparing those measurement size to the annual growth rate, well, they could calculate how long ago the avalanche occurred. So they actually use the biology to tell something about the geology. Cemeteries are an especially good place to calculate Xanthoria growth rates because the gravestones tell us right on them. They're marked when the person died. And so we know, potentially how long the Xanthoria has had to grow on those markers. You can do a fairly easy calculation of growth rate. So I think what this story tells us is that the cases where an understanding of biology helps when one is researching the history of place, well, there's actually quite a few of them. And so being a biologist like me, I think is a useful asset when a person is doing interesting things in history.
You know what we call that, Gordon? Symbiosis, bringing together two different things, history and biology. Thanks so much for this, Gordon. What's up for next week?
Well, I hope that none of our listeners will take offense, but next week we're going to talk about pinheads here in Manitoba.
You're just going to leave it at that?
That's about it.
Okay,
for now.
Great. Thanks so much, Gordon. We'll see you next week.
Talk then. Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows gets me back in Manitoba many moons.